Hello and welcome to another episode of Twig and Soap Talk Games. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Things go on in IRL.
Yeah. Yeah, so we just to let folks know, we're back and we're gonna try to do our best to be more consistent with getting an episode out every week if we can. You should know that we sat down and recorded a 2-hour long conversation with my good friend Dr. Ibrahim Yussel, who teaches game design at a local college here in upstate New York. But the only issue is that it's a very dense 2 hours, and quite frankly, Mark was a little unprepared to hang in that conversation and didn't say much. So, yeah. I haven't decided what to do with it yet. I want to break it up into chunks and release it and let people listen to it, but the fact that Mark isn't super present in the conversation makes me feel like I didn't want to put it out as a regular Twig and Soap episode because, you know, it's about Twig right, and Soap.
That's and that's nobody's fault but mine, because, like, as you mentioned, that I was unprepared. When we go into these episodes, I do no preparation, as probably you could tell on some episodes, but I don't do any preparation because I like to just come off the top of my head. And similar to what I do with my few YouTube videos that I do, I don't write anything down. And sometimes that bites me in the ass. And for that episode, it did. I made the joke during the episode that, you know, it was above my pay grade, above my head. And that's only because I didn't do my due diligence. So it's not their fault. It's mine, guys.
Well, to be fair, you couldn't really prepare for something like that. The conversation just went the directions that it went. And frankly, you know, Dr. Yussel and I have a longstanding relationship. We are IRL friends. We've been friends for like 5 years now. We talk about stuff in the games industry all the time. And, you know, he hangs out in my streams when I stream on Twitch. This is usual conversation fare for us. And so we have a rapport, and you just don't have that yet. So it's right. No fault of your own. It's just I noticed your absence, and I didn't, you know, I didn't feel like releasing it as a regular episode. So there's some bonus content coming at some point. It might sound a little dated when it finally hits because we talked about some stuff that was going on about a month ago. But we're going to get back on the grind here. We've actually got some really interesting stuff to talk about this episode because some stuff has happened in the last couple weeks, and I want to dig into it. So let's just launch right into that. Let's talk about some news. One of the big things here to start off with is CD Projekt Red Cyberpunk 2077 Crunch. Now, I got a Polygon article here that I'm referencing, so you can Google for it, by Patricia Hernandez. There's been an interesting thing going on in regards to Cyberpunk 2077's crunch, because CD Projekt Red promised that there would be no crunch. They came out and said, hey, we're not going to do a crunch period, as the games industry is at this point kind of infamous for. They had delayed Cyberpunk, because Cyberpunk was originally supposed to come out in April, but COVID kind of got in the way of that. So they delayed, they pushed it back to the end of the year. And, you know, they were supposed to not have crunch. In late September, Bloomberg reported on changing working conditions at CD Projekt Red. And people are pulling 70, 80-hour weeks right now. And it's mandatory overtime. And it's created kind
not
of...
Not a fan.
Yeah, not a fan at all. It's created this kind of interesting backlash. Now, some people try to say that the public doesn't really understand what's going on with this, and that crunch is normal. It's normal in the software development industry. It's normal in the games industry. And to that I say, quite frankly, bullshit. I mean, it is. It is the norm. And I think you'll agree with me here, Twig.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the people that buy, the end users that buy video games, have been so spoiled with release dates that, you know, the ones that make the games, that they come up with these artificial dates. I mean, some of them, I'm sure, are tied around this, that. I mean, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, if you've got a movie tie-in game, obviously you don't want that game to come out 2 months after the movie's premiered. But you know going in, especially a company like CD Projekt Red, and they're not the only ones to do that. Rockstar, you name it, Naughty Dog. They know what it's going to take. Now, obviously, they don't know the bugs that crop up when it goes through alpha testing and things like that. but they know how long it's going to take. So why don't they start the fucking thing earlier and not kill their people at the end of it? And just maybe not even have release windows instead of release dates.
Mm-hmm.
If you have release windows, you know, it'll be out November 2020 or whatever the case may be. Then it gives you 30 fucking days to work around any last minute issues you've got and not kill your damn people. You know what I mean? It's stupid. It's a dumb practice. And the end users, we got so spoiled with release dates that we cause it. And most of them don't care because they just want a game. I get that. But there are humans on the other end of that fucking computer making those games for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, so this isn't new controversy. You know, a lot of people have been citing an expose article back in 2006 about EA and like the spouses of people at EA who hadn't seen their significant others in weeks, essentially. Like, they barely see them at all. They're not present in their lives, the lives of their families and friends and everything. And it's not sustainable. Let's be real. Like, this isn't... Why are we... Video games are an entertainment product. Why are we treating it like a sweatshop and it's the 1890s? Like, this doesn't make any sense. It's...
Agreed. Now, let me argue on the other end of it, because here's what I've heard in the past. You know, well, they know what they're signing up for when they do it. You know, similar to, well, you know, people bitching about waitresses making $2.18 an hour. Well, you know what you're signing up for that you when you're doing it, so you choose to do it. Yeah, I get that. Okay, I get that to an extent. But if you're not getting any overtime, which labor law mandates, I understand salary's different, and I assume they're on salary. I mean, I don't know. I'm not in that industry. But at a point, I know from experience, doing what I do for a living, when you reach in a 24-hour cycle, when you reach double-digit hours in, your productivity goes down dramatically every time that clock ticks.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're, I would rather have my people there for 8 absolutely knock-dead productivity and the hours where they're going to produce than have them there for 12, 18 hours where half that is them just plodding along and causing more problems than they would if they weren't there at all.
Well, yeah, of course, because that's the other aspect of this, right? We're talking about extraordinarily technical work. If you're a coder, coding is so detail-oriented. You have to be on the ball. And a misplaced semicolon, a misspelled word in syntax or something like that, that can derail everything. And that can cause minutes, hours of time lost as you try to scour your code and find where the problem is, you know? And this,
well, yeah, absolutely. And most of that should have been done well before they're in quote crunch time. Crunch time, but should be for nothing but beta testing, in my opinion. Closed beta, where you haven't play tested and you're finding bugs and things like that. You should not be still coding shit that late into the game, in my opinion.
No, I mean, it's well, it, you know, the coding thing is that's the nature of it. Like, you have to code to fix bugs and stuff. But are they still working on, like, core mechanics, core gameplay elements, or are they smoothing out bugs? That's the question. Because if you're still working on core aspects of the game, this game isn't ready to come out. You need to push it again. And I know that there's a lot of money on the line, and there's, you know, obviously, like, you were talking about release windows. When you release a game is huge. Like, for example, with a video game right now, this time of year, releasing it into the holiday season is a huge, huge opportunity. It's a huge boon. You know, you get to make your game the holiday release, you know? Cyberpunk coming out holiday 2020 could make it way bigger than it was going to be otherwise. And it was going to be big either way.
Yes, but CD Projekt Red knew how long it'd take to code The Witcher, which arguably probably is going to be in the long run a much more involved game than Cyberpunk, I would imagine.
I don't know.
Witcher 3 is freaking ridiculously complex.
I would expect Cyberpunk to be equally complex. I don't think this is going to be any simpler. Even if it's
equal, they knew how long it'd take to make The Witcher 3, correct? So why didn't they account for that? And I'm picking on CD Projekt Red because that was that's the article you cited. But any developers could be put lumped in that. They know how long it takes to make the fucking game, so why don't they just make that window to make it so where they're not killing their people?
Yeah. No, I mean, every developer is guilty of this. And, you know, it's one thing when you're, when you, we're talking about a smaller, mid-sized developer that has a small staff, and, you know, they've got, like, maybe a trade show coming up, and they're crunching in order to get a demo ready for that, or they have, you know, a contract on the line or something, if you're talking about, like, an indie studio or something, and they have to release at a certain time. It's, nobody is saying that you can't crunch at all. We all understand if you need to crunch for the last couple weeks right before something goes out. That's the nature of industry at times. You know, you and I, Mark, we've worked a ton of retail, right? We both have experience in retail. We know what it's like to be around for inventory. We know what it's like to work through the holiday season. You know, when you work the holiday season, you're expected to not have a life. That's the job. You know, you're like, you don't have a personal life from mid-November through early January. That's just the gig. And
yep, my 2 weeks from now, the hours of operation for where I work are extended by 2 hours for a month.
Right. And yeah, that's standard. And, you know, there's obviously a completely different topic and conversation to be had around, you know, the consumerism and the way the holiday shopping season works here in the States. And that is for a different show because it has nothing to do with gaming, but it's a similar conversation.
But I'm also going to be very interested in how 2020 is going to play out.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the holiday season 2020 is going to be a wild one, I think. But yeah, no, it's like, this is, at the end of the day, we're talking about, you know, CD Projekt Red has hundreds of people working for them. Bigger companies like EA have hundreds, if not thousands, of developers working for them. You are impacting the lives of hundreds of people when you're doing crunch for weeks on end, months on end before the release of a game. And you're grinding them down. You're sucking the life out of these people, the enthusiasm for the industry. You see a lot of people leave the industry. The attrition is high.
Well, you also see lackluster games during crunch time too that have to be patched day one, which we've already talked about.
Right, well,
No Man's Sky is a good example of that. I mean, I understand the guy oversold the product, but during crunch time for that, I mean, you ended up with a lackluster shit product that had to be. It's a great game now, but it had to go through all kinds of growing pains, and that shouldn't have happened. They know how long it takes to make a fucking game.
So one of the ideas, and I'd love to hear your response to this, one of the ideas I've bandied about for a bit is I actually think it's about high time the industry unionizes. I don't know if you agree with that or not. We can get into it a little bit. I'm not trying to make this an economics or politics conversation.
Right. Well, and you know how I stand on unionization because of how I lean politically. So, on one hand, you know, it sounds good, but I'm not paying somebody else to talk to me to management. That's not happening.
That's fair. I think something like that might need to happen in order to hold the industry as a whole accountable. There doesn't seem to be any, because in the example that I use a lot is the rest of the entertainment industry. You know, the film industry, the television industry, they have multiple unions that are involved. You know, there's the Screen Actors Guild for the actors. The unions for the people who work crew. There's even unions for directors and producers and all that kind of stuff.
I know. There's unions in baseball, my favorite pastime. I get all that.
Right. And what is the point of those organizations? It's to protect the labor. It's to act in their interest and make sure that things are fair. And when things aren't fair, because things do go over schedule sometimes, there are provisions to take care of that, you know? To, like, for example, the film industry. If a shoot goes over, you know, into a certain window, like, for example, days that are marked out as just blacked out, as those aren't production days, if a shoot goes late the day before and lapses in, they get massively compensated. You know, they get a lot more pay, and it, you know, they almost like, ooh, they start rubbing their hands together because, oh no, I worked an extra hour or two into the blacked out period, but ooh, big paycheck. But that's not the point. Like, the point is that They know that their interests are represented. They know that there are guarantees in place. And that industry is volatile, you know? If you work crew in the film or television industry, you book a gig that is uncertain. You know, you might be working, you know, like, for example, a film shoot might go X amount of weeks or months. You don't know when the next gig is going to come necessarily. If you book a television show, you don't know if you're going to get renewed. You know, there's a lot of volatility. And the games industry isn't that different. When a big title comes out, do you know what happens right after that title comes out? A couple weeks into release, people start getting laid off or shifted to other projects if they haven't already been. So there is not always guarantees. And there needs to be some guarantees, and there needs to be some limits. And
no, but I have a simple solution that does not involve unions.
Okay.
Unions only help the union reps and the higher and sometimes middle management. The entry-level person, the key gripper, I can't see them being helped. The person that comes on, you know, and is doing, you know, mailroom or whatever at CD Projekt Red. I mean, I have no idea what kind of jobs they have there, but I'm saying the entry-level people, they don't really benefit much from it. Well, the simple solution to that is to outlaw salary for people in those industries and make them hourly. I guarantee you, if they're making time and a half based on the U.S. labor law, they'll get the shit done on time. I guarantee it. They're not going to want to pay time and a half.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, in case anybody's out there listening, like looking at it from the other side, of course, we know games are expensive to produce. You know, it costs a lot of money, a lot of labor is involved. It's the expectations of the community are high. There was a wonderful article that I read recently about how, because the industry has transitioned to games as a service and also games having continual content releases, it's actually put a lot of pressure on the industry to constantly extend the life of a game. The expectation from consumers is that if I buy a game like Cyberpunk 2077, there will be a DLC release. There will be a continuation of the story. There will be additional content eventually. My expectation is that I'm not going to get a one-and-done experience. I'm going to get a game that I can play and return to a couple times over the course of the next year or two. That's become standard. That's become the expectation. And the idea is if your game doesn't do that, at least with your major AAA releases, you're inferior in some way. And that has negative connotations and consequences. So I completely understand that there's another side to any of these conversations. But crunch sucks, and we know from people who work in the industry, we know from the families of people who work in the industry, that it doesn't just happen for a week or two before the game comes out. It happens for months. In the case of CD Projekt Red, we know it was reported that there was crunch before major releases at conventions and trade shows, like when they showed more footage and stuff. So there was, you know, or when there was a playable demo released to press and stuff like that. There are other crunch periods. It isn't like a one and done, hey, we just have to grind it out for a couple weeks, suck it up. If that was it, if that's all these companies had to do, if that's all these people were expected to do, that wouldn't be such a big deal. Anybody who's ever worked hard at a job is like, yeah, I can grind it out for a couple weeks. It'll suck, but at the end of that couple weeks, everything will be better. I'll have a nice big fat paycheck because I had worked all those extra hours, or I was compensated for that crunch period. But that's not necessarily happening here. It's happening for months, and it's grinding these people out. And we also know that this is an issue, for example, in Japan. There's actually numerous stories in Japan of people dying at work because of the crunch culture of just staying at work all the time and just living your job, essentially. Which is crazy. Could you imagine people in an office setting dying at their desk because they're not taking care of themselves because they're at work essentially 24/7.
Yeah, I don't need Horizon Zero Dawn 2 that fucking badly for somebody to lose their life.
Right, exactly. You know, and I feel the same way. I don't need it to come out today. You know, like you talk about No Man's Sky. No Man's Sky is a perfect example of, you know, the creative and Sony got together, they planned out what they thought they were going to launch, and they made these huge promises, and they did it with a tight timetable, and it blew up in their face because the game that they released was not what they promised, it was not what they were hyping, and it's not that that game didn't get there eventually, it's just they salted the fields of good intentions along the way, and the community had no respect for them. No Man's Sky is still a joke to this day. Right?
It's a great game now, though.
Most right. But so many people will never give it a try because it was a joke for so long, because it became a meme. No Man's Sky is now a reference to like overpromising and underselling. It has completely changed the face of the industry in that regard. And even if the game is good today, it's hard to recover from something like that.
Do you know where I think the origin of this all started?
I don't. Go ahead.
Okay. So you're going to have to work with me a little bit on this one. And a lot of the facts, maybe they're in my head, so I may be off on a few time periods. But I think this all started with, believe it or not, E.T. for the Atari 2600.
Okay.
Widely considered the worst video game ever made.
Yeah. Okay.
Caused a video game crash. They ended up having to bury the damn cartridges in the desert and all that shit. Okay, because they overproduced them. The developer, I cannot remember his name, of that game, who, you know, got shunned afterwards, obviously, was given 5 weeks from sun up to sunset on that game for it to be released. 5 weeks. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but I mean, when you're talking probably 2600, that's
yeah,
not a lot of time, but it's more than you would need for a current gen game. But he got the shit together. He pitched it to Spielberg. Spielberg signed off on it as it was. And he had that game released in 5 weeks. And he had not done anything that quickly prior. And I don't even know if he worked in the industry afterwards, because I don't remember the story all that well. But, I mean, that started it all, because developers understood that they're going to need more time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're given timetables, especially by somebody like Spielberg, you're gonna want to adhere to that. So you send out shit. I mean, it was worse than shovelware, because shovelware was around then. But I think, in my opinion, that's where all of this started, and that goes all the way back to the Atari 2600.
Yeah, I mean, It's hard to say when it started. I think that's a good early example of it for sure. And it's an example of it failing colossally, right? Like that push was to create, like, literally from ideation to completion, that was, we should make a game to capitalize on this, what's going to be a blockbuster film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was no heart and soul in it. And CD Projekt Red is, you know, we're talking about them because they're beloved by the community. People love this company. They love The Witcher 3 is considered to be one of the greatest achievements in the current generation of gaming. It's a beautiful game. It's got wonderful story. It has hundreds of hours of potential gameplay. It was always released at a fair price. DLC was released at a fair price. There was not over monetization, there was not greedy cash grabbing monetization. The DLC that was released, you know, when they asked for $15 for a new piece of DLC originally, they were giving you another 60 plus hours. They're essentially selling you a sequel, if you will, of gameplay. And I think, even I know your stance on DLC and stuff, but like, even you can agree, when you're getting essentially like a 40 to 50 to 60 hour experience for $10-$15, that's a wonderful deal.
And it is, but that's not the norm.
No, it's not. And you know, that doesn't come easily. That kind of expansive content isn't, you know, it's so easy to shovel something out, like release a couple skins and maybe an extra level to a game or something. Be like, oh, look at our wonderful DLC. Give us $20, you know, grabby hands, child grabby hands. That's not what they did. So this is a company that had a lot of people's respect, and they're almost legendary in the industry for being super consumer friendly and fair. On top of that, you know, they own GOG, And GOG is DRM-free games, you know? And they recently gave you The Witcher 3 on GOG if you owned it on other platforms. You could go redeem it over there. Again, very pro-consumer stuff. So people are a little, I guess, crestfallen to hear that as consumer-friendly as they are not developer, they are not labor-friendly. And that sucks because we want them to be the best in every way they can be because we love their product, we love their games, and we love knowing that they're a good company. And I don't necessarily think that people at CD Projekt Red are evil, like the higher-ups, the people making the decisions. I think that COVID has thrown a lot of wrenches in a lot of works. It's made things very difficult for a lot of companies, and it's reasonable to run into complications. But with that said, my takeaway is, if you need more time, push back the release. You could push it back another month, you could push it back a little farther. Whatever needs to be done, I don't think any of us would begrudge them for pushing it back, because we all know that COVID has been such an issue for anything getting released on time.
Right. Well, even under normal circumstances, the industry needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Metroid 4, that was apparently such garbage that Nintendo pulled it from it. Instead of trying to rush something out, they pulled it from whatever developer they have, and they've assigned it with a brand new developer, and thus it's being delayed. Didn't bother Nintendo.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, Nintendo sometimes is legendary for having their head up their butt in regards to, like, what people want and, like, being a modern game company. But they also have a commitment to quality. In their first-party titles, they're not going to push out a garbage game. Now, I say that, and, you know, there's been heavy criticisms of the most recent Mario Party, and there were issues with Mario Maker 2, for example. But that's Nintendo not understanding what people want out of those experiences. That's not them pushing an inferior product that they know is bad. I had a lot of go ahead.
Nintendo also says, well, this is what you're going to get, and you'll like it. Nine times out of ten, we do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, those games, despite their flaws, are still enjoyable. They still have a lot of pluses to them. So, yeah, this was an interesting topic. We went really long on this. But, yeah, this is something to be aware of, and I think something has to change, because I know from talking with my friend Dr. Ussel, who teaches people who are looking to enter the games industry. I asked him recently, I'm not going to give you an exact number because I shouldn't share that information publicly, but I asked him recently, I'm like, how many of your students do you expect to actually enter the industry? And it was a very low percentage. And so if you take that in mind and then go on additionally and say, well, how many of those who actually enter the industry are going to stick it out and be successful, that's probably an even smaller number. So when you take that into consideration, you're going to run through everyone eventually. And we've seen it, like I've seen it with companies like Blizzard, where the people who started that company and created all these wonderful franchises like World of Warcraft, but Warcraft that eventually became World of Warcraft, StarCraft, more recently Overwatch, and others, Diablo. They created these wonderful IPs that people love, and they were a company for a long time that was known for releasing quality games and quality updates to those games. They were basically like, everything Blizzard does is gold. All those people who were there in the beginning who helped form that are gone now. And I honestly believe it's because they've been ground out by the modern culture of expectation and the modern culture of, we have to push something out and monetize it as much as possible and just squeeze all the blood out of that stone that we can. Mm-hmm. So, that said, I got another topic that we might not go as long on, or maybe we will, we'll see. This happened just a few days ago, and this one is, spicy indeed. I'm so ready for this. Alex Hutchinson, who's at BangBangClick on Twitter, he tweeted out in regards to... let me provide a little background for anyone who might not be super aware. Twitch sent out an email last week that was basically, it was in regards to the DMCA takedowns, and it was basically like, hey, your account has had flagged content that is, you know, not compliant with DMCA, and, you know, could have a takedown notice issued for it. We're going to give you, I think it was 2 or 3 days time period that was given at the time, to review your content and remove any content that would be infringing on intellectual property, you know, copyright. Mm-hmm. And so now that is a really dense and deep conversation because, you know, one of my favorite YouTubers who talks about industry stuff, Devin Nash, he heads up a talent agency that represents streamers and content creators. He said, you know, as content creators, we are always 100% responsible for this content and for any IP violations that are in our content, any copyright violations. We as content creators are responsible. So your YouTube videos, your streams, if you're playing, you know, copywritten music, all that kind of stuff, you are responsible for those violations. He said, but Twitch really dropped the ball because they don't have a great system in place to identify what actually is your content that is in violation and then to like private it or something like that. You can't private videos on Twitch. You can only delete them. So it's a completely separate conversation. It maybe isn't super interesting to people who aren't interested in the content creator side of the industry. So I'm not going to get into that too much, but content creators are freaking out because they said, we're going to start, you know, processing DMCA claims as normal. And I believe it was on Friday was the date that they said. They provided a date and time when things were going to go back to normal. And so in many cases, you know, if you talk about big streamers, they have hundreds of thousands of hours of content that might be archived on their channels. They have potentially hundreds of clips that were clipped by the community. And anything, any one of those things that has a copyright violation in them can be DMCA claimed. And the policy through Twitch is very simple. 3 violations and your shit is shut down. No take-backsies. Like, if you have 3 violations, you lose your account. You're banned. They will not reverse it. There's no process to appeal it. You're just done. And so if you're a big streamer, you know, somebody who streams to hundreds or thousands of people every night, that is your entire livelihood. That's your entire future that's on the line. And so those expression, you know, the expressions of frustration and concern were going around the Twitter space and every place else on streams and stuff. So in come Alex Hutchinson at Bang Bang Click, who is a senior creative director with Google Stadia, apparently, who used to work, I believe, at Ubisoft because he worked on Assassin's Creed 3 and some other games. He said, and I quote, "Streamers worried about getting their content pulled because they used music they didn't pay for should be more worried by the fact that they're streaming games that they didn't pay for as well. It's all gone as soon as publishers decide to enforce it." In a subsequent tweet, he followed up with, "The truth is a streamer should be paying the developers and publishers of the games they stream. They should be buying a license like any real business and paying for the content they use." Oh, boy. Go on. What did you say?
The guy's an idiot.
Yeah. So, okay. This now, as a content creator, as somebody who's been podcasting for 5 years, who's been streaming for over a year, not as much recently, but has been streaming for over a year, somebody who follows streamers quite a bit and understands the ins and outs of some of the aspects of what they deal with, this is asinine, to say the least. This is such a head-up-ass statement. Because the simple fact is, yes, if you're looking at it from a legal perspective, there is probably a basis, a legal basis, for developers and publishers to lean on content creators and force them to license the content that they're using for their content. You know, the games that they're using to provide content. However, the thing about that is, it might be covered by being transformative content, You know, that's in the law. If you can take, for example, if you want to do a review video on a film or on a piece of music or something like that, you can use excerpts of that content while you're providing, you know, criticism or commentary, that sort of stuff. And the idea behind that is you are transforming that content to provide educational or opinion-based content. And that is covered under fair use. So perhaps video games apply in that regard, because if you're playing over a game or whatever, you are transforming that experience. We don't know if that'll stand up to legal muster yet, because it hasn't really been challenged, per se, in courts. But, more importantly, and I'm ranting here, and I'm sorry, folks.
It's all right, I haven't even started.
Yeah, well, I'm going to let you jump in, but let me set the stage for you. Please realize, if you're new to this idea, in today's day and age, streamers and content creators on YouTube are the best organic source of advertising for your game, assuming you have a good product. If you have a bad product, it can hurt you. You know, obviously, so like a No Man's Sky situation, if you have a shoddy product, people will stream it or make videos about it, and they'll tear you apart, and they'll ruin the public perception of your game, and that's a danger. But honestly, in my opinion, that's on you. You know, like, you put out a subpar product, you deserve to get roasted. I'm sorry. And there's also a caveat for, there are some smaller developers that produce, like, narrative-driven games that a big content creator could do a Let's Play of that could potentially hurt sales because they're playing a narrative game. They watch that person play that narrative game, and then people don't feel like they have to buy that game. But even then, I kind of say, like, so your game doesn't have any variants? You don't have any pathway choices for players? It's basically just a you know, on-rail story, like you're playing a television show or a movie? Maybe you don't have the best product then. But again, let's not get into that. More importantly, streamers, especially high-profile streamers, provide a ton of organic advertisement for your game. So much so that we see the industry trip over itself to pay these developers, to pay these content creators to cover their products, to stream their game. They pay them, you know? And it ranges from mid-sized to big. Like, I've seen Digital Extremes, who makes Warframe. Warframe is a free-to-play game that has been wildly successful because Digital Extremes is a Canadian developer that does things a little bit differently than pretty much everybody else. And they really embraced their content creator community, and they paid high-profile content creators to stream their games when they had major content releases. They sponsored them. And, you know, it was very obvious that these people were expected to play for a certain amount of time, because you saw people like King Gothalion and some other people just basically play for X amount of hours, and then as soon as that was up, they switched back to the games they normally play for their streams or whatever. But the point is, they paid them to get eyes on the game. You see mid-sized developers in particular, like Digital Extremes and for example, the developer that makes Sea of Thieves, they greatly embrace their content creator communities and they form communities for them where they're, you know, they get labeled as an official content creator, you know, like a partnership program. Partnerships, yeah, it's usually partners, which means they might give them free, you know, currency in the games or whatever to buy cosmetics or whatever is in their game so that they can put it on display. They give them opportunities to come to events like conventions, like TwitchCon and stuff, to speak and be seen and, you know, be ambassadors of their game. They may not always pay them, like cut them a check directly, but they give them the tools to basically succeed at advertising their game and building up the community. And I've seen it time and time again. As a matter of fact, in my case, Hunt Showdown, I never would have started playing that game if a Sea of Thieves streamer, Pace, who's the biggest committed, you know, day-to-day Sea of Thieves streamer, if he didn't play it in his, like, the later half of his streams on a couple nights a week because he enjoyed it, and, you know, once prime time was over, he was safe to explore something new, I never would have gotten eyes on that game, and I never would have bought it. And that's just an example. But anyways, they go out of their way to embrace the content creator community. Sometimes they pay them. Sometimes they just give them the tools that can help them succeed better. Sometimes they get with Twitch, for example, and do a Twitch Drops event, which is huge for those content creators, because for that period of time, you're going to get thousands and thousands of people showing up that wouldn't normally because they want the free stuff from Twitch Drops, and they get to see your content. And it's a huge boon for them because that's how they get new fans. That's how they get new people to sub or donate and all that kind of stuff. Anyways, my point here, and before I let you run amok here, Mark, I feel like when this guy made this statement, the people in the marketing department slammed their head into their desks immediately. Because the marketing side of the industry is doing everything they can to embrace organic advertisement. Organic word of mouth. This is the new word of mouth. Streaming and content creation on platforms like YouTube, this is the new word of mouth. This is how you get the word out about your games. And to say that you're going to force people to license it, it's like, so if you take a big streamer, let's say, for example, Jacksepticeye, because I'm going to mention him in a second. He is both a streamer and a YouTuber. Are you going to ask him to license your games to play, but then also cut him a check to play your games? Like, are you going to be like, well, you got to give us X percentage of, you know, your revenue generated while playing our games, but by the way, would you like X number of thousands of dollars to play our game during this release window when it comes out and we have new content or whatever? Do you know how asinine that sounds? How ass backwards that is?
Words can't even really describe that ridiculous window-licking concept from that guy.
And then the flip side is, so the only way you're going to get serious revenue in regards to what he's saying, oh, we should get paid as content creators, or as developers and publishers, we should get paid for, you know, that you're using our content to generate revenue. Okay, well, the number of people who are streaming or making content that are actually generating serious revenue where it would be noticeable to a developer or a publisher to get a cut of that is relatively small. Now, there's potentially thousands, if not maybe millions of dollars of revenue in that, depending on how big your game is and everything. I understand that. But those are the people that you want to pay to do it anyways, because they're the ones that are going to generate the most advertising for you. So are you going to, you know, put the thumbscrews to your small and mid-sized creators? You know, the people streaming to 2 people or to maybe 10 people, 20 people? Are you going to ask them to pay money out of pocket to be able to play your game on their streams? Because I'll tell you what, as a small content creator, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to give you any money. I don't have the money to give you. You know, on Twitch, for example, you have to hit a certain threshold to even get paid out. You can go months in getting people's subs and donations before you can get paid out without hitting that threshold. You know, and if you're a small channel, you know, you could run a year or two before you get paid out. And you just can't afford to do it. Like, there's just not on top of all the other costs of being a content creator. You know, you got to build your computer, and you got to build a good one for it to run well. You got to get equipment like stuff like an Elgato if you're running anything on a console. And honestly, a lot of streamers have 2 PCs, and they use an Elgato to string them together to stream anyways, because that's the most efficient setup, and to ensure that they get the highest quality production. Expensive mics, expensive lighting, you know, expensive computer chairs that may or may not get sent to you because that's expected. A lot of content creators nowadays have to turn the room that they're streaming from into a set. There's all of these costs that go into being a successful content creator that, you know, come way before even thinking about a licensing agreement with an actual payout to a video game. Because I'll tell you what, if you start to force that, content creators will just turn to other games that don't have it. And I guarantee you there are lots of other developers that think you're crazy for trying that, and they will not do that. You know, they will actively say, hey, we don't have a licensing expectation. Get your ass over here and play our games. Anyways, jump in. Jump in, sir.
Okay, well, I'm not gonna go as in-depth as you, but I'm probably going to come out firing a lot hotter.
Okay.
Get it done quicker.
All right.
Let's go back to how people used to buy video games. Let's go back from the inception of the video games. Okay. So you've got your Atari 2600 and your NES and all that. So you had television, right?
Mm-hmm.
That showed, primarily it was to showcase the hardware, but as the hardware had a year or two under its belt, the television advertising, especially around fourth quarter, was geared more towards the titles. So, and there's inherent cost with that. I don't know. I'm not into that industry, so I don't know. But, I mean, there is a cost, correct? You have to pay the networks to show your ads. Okay, so we get a little bit further down. We get into maybe the Super Nintendo generation and Genesis, and there's still ads. Genesis had some iconic ads. If you remember that, Genesis does what Nintendo don't. But again, that's the hardware side of it, because we're basically just talking about software right now. You would get a lot of your information, and I was one of them. I could not wait to get that monthly GamePro magazine.
Uh-huh.
That was a great 10-minute toilet read right there. And you'd get your information that way, you know. And some of them will come with maps, and you'd get those maps and the Nintendo Power, open it up, and you'd look at it, and you're like, oh shit, man, I want to go get this game. So it went from TV ads. They still had TV ads, but people started leaning more towards magazines, or at least in my circles, and myself included, was that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the magazines kind of went away, and then there was a little bit of a lull between the magazines and where we are now, where you still had a smattering of television ads, but that's what you started relying on before GameStop became who they are now. There were people that worked in various GameStops or EBs or Babbages that you relied on to give you good information on games. If you didn't know, you'd read the jacket, obviously.
Huh?
You'd open up and read the blurb. But you would rely on the people that were in the store, and you would hope they weren't steering you wrong.
Yeah.
And generally, they didn't. Now, this is before the power-up card and all that shit, where they had a lot of the customers the way they are now.
Yeah.
But then that was truly word of mouth. And so you don't see any, or at least I haven't, see any software-related television advertisements anymore. They're online. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, I mean, there's still us old fuckers that like watching television.
Yeah, I don't, but, you know, go on.
I know. But now the medium is that you get online, you get all your information online, and you get them from YouTube, you get them from Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
That cost the developers and the publishers absolutely fucking nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, unless they're paying some of the bigger ones. I like to use Metal Jesus Rocks as an example because he's one of the biggest YouTubers that I follow. I understand he doesn't do a lot of game reviews specifically. I mean, he'll bring up a gaggle of 12 or so games that he likes, but he doesn't sit down and Twitch stream, as far as I know. I may be wrong, but I don't think he does that with titles. But anytime he puts a video out, there are going to be tens of thousands of people that watch that video, no matter what the subject matter is, just
yeah.
because of who he is. He's a great personality,
yep.
and he's very, very well-known YouTuber.
Yeah.
So there'll be tens of thousands of sets of eyes on your product without you having to do a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the obvious exception is the when you mentioned when they're actually paying some of these YouTubers, and that I don't know what the breakdown is of the companies that do that, or the, you know, where they just allow it to happen. But if you're going to start DCMA these content creators, you're not going to be in business very long.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
you're going to be bought.
Well, that's the thing. Like, okay, so first of all, if a company decides to start, you know, flexing their licensing rights on streamers and content creators, you are going to see a revolution in the community. Like, first of all, you're going to see the content creator community turn on you, and then you're going to see all of their hardcore fans turn on you, and they are going to be loud. They're going to be all over Twitter. They're going to be all over Facebook. They're going to be all over Discords and everything. You know, they're going to be all over social media. They're going to be tearing you apart. And we saw, if everybody remembers, a few years ago with EA and Battlefront 2, EA thought that their britches were too big. They thought they were the king of the ring. We can't be toppled. And they got, I'm gonna use foul language, fouler language than I usually use. They got knocked the fuck out by the community. They, to this day, have the most downvoted Reddit comment ever, with millions of downvotes. Millions of downvotes. You know, where, and they just got torn apart for what they were going to do with Battlefront 2. And it was such a severe reaction that that game massively undersold their projected expectations and probably what they needed to recoup investment. And they ultimately stripped out all of those microtransactions for over a year. And when they came back, the microtransactions that came back were cosmetic and not pay to win. They, the one of the biggest companies in the world in gaming, got completely fucked up by the community, and they had to change everything, and it cost them a lot of money. Like, it might not have taken money out of the coffers directly as much as it cost them a lot of opportunity to make money.
And now they're just a shitty studio that can't make a Madden worth of shit anymore.
Well, there's that, but like, that's a completely different thing. But I mean, that also changed their, they had to change their perspective on what the community wants, because they had said people only wanted multiplayer, you know, games as a service content. And then they're like, oh, maybe we were wrong. And then they come out with Fallen Order, which sold like gangbusters and was well received, you know? That came out a couple years ago, and it was an awesome, successful Star Wars game for them. And now, more recently, I mean, you know, they've done other stuff. They finally branched out into stuff that people were really desperate for. They had to learn. And if anybody else tries to do this, like Hutchinson is talking about, they're going to get fucked up. The industry is going to tear them apart. It's going to be... The wolf pack is going to descend, because other developers and other publishers are going to see that going on, and they're going to play to that strength and do everything they can to embrace the content creator community. And you're going to see your games getting blotted out by the companies that are smart enough to realize this opportunity. One of my favorite, I mentioned him earlier, you know, Devin Nash is one of my favorite content creators. He had a follow-up tweet where he said, "Publishers will never do this. Why would they? It's free promotion for their game and inherently symbiotic. Further, most EULAs already grant this permission to broadcasters. Your tweet is unnecessary scare tactics during a time we ought instead discuss productive solutions." Because it's...
Agree 100%.
Yeah, right. And that is the truth. Content create... Let's... I was going to talk about this a little later, and we'll get into it more later when we talk about what we've been playing lately, but... Look at the cultural phenomenon that has been Among Us lately. This game came out in 2018. Nobody knew about it for over a year. And then earlier this year, content creators started to stream it, and it has gone gangbusters. It is completely blown up. And I mean, just this past week, now we're not going to get into politics, Mark, so bite your tongue. Just this past week, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she and Ilhan Omar, both Democratic congresswomen, they streamed Among Us with some other prominent content creators, such as Pokimane and Disguised Toast and a few others, like really high-profile people. And her AOC's Twitch channel had over 300,000 viewers at the beginning of the stream. That should tell you something. Without talking about the politics, that should tell you something.
Staying away.
Right. Among Us became an overnight sensation because of streaming. A game that had already been out and just... And it's an awesome game. I'll talk about that later. But the point is, streaming did that. And Twitch clips being, you know, archived or compiled over on YouTube did that. That, and it is complete, it's like, it's just, it has been a revolution.
Right. And if memory serves, I want to finish up by saying this. If memory serves, Twitch is a derivative of Justin TV back in the day, correct?
Justin TV rebranded to Twitch. Yeah.
Okay. So back in the day, if memory serves, Justin TV was kind of like a, quote, dark web place where you could watch illegal content, correct?
I don't know that that was ever really its intended purpose,
well,
though it might have happened.
I don't know. It wasn't their mission statement, no. But it was commonly used for that. The only thing that's going to happen is if the Twitch platform goes to this, they're just going to make another platform. The only people that have the pockets deep enough to keep keep going after people is Nintendo. They're relentless.
Hmm.
For whatever reason, they're relentless. And again, it's like, I don't care if you like the way we do things. You're gonna buy it anyway, and we do.
Yeah.
So we put up with all kinds of shit from Nintendo. Nobody else has those kind of pockets. And I'm telling you, if they try to force this issue, there'll just be another Twitch that comes around on the dark web, and people will start going to that.
You don't even need the dark web. Discord has a built-in streaming feature now. So if you're in a Discord voice chat with people. Mm-hmm. Anybody in that voice chat can start streaming what they're playing. So if you're a content creator that has a successful community, you can just start streaming through your Discord. Now, it's not quite the same. Obviously, you don't have the integrated donation features or any of that stuff.
Right.
But let me tell you, if these companies start leaning on Twitch and YouTube for this, Discord could feasibly... Because there are ways to hide your channels in Discord.
Right.
So a content creator could, you know, potentially hide their channel that they're streaming in and only let members in and all that kind of stuff. And there are ways for them to monetize it. I could see Discord becoming the future of something like that pretty quickly.
And frankly, Discord to me is much more user-friendly. I much prefer Discord over the other two to begin with. So that would be a transition that I would applaud.
If they were to embrace actual content, you know, hosting as like in it, something that they were dedicated to doing, it would be a pretty interesting development. But like my point is like the dark web thing concept that you're talking about, it could start happening on Discord. The tools are already in place. So to wrap this topic up, I think we both agree this guy's an idiot. Maybe he's not an idiot, but like he just doesn't.
Oh, I would say he is.
He only sees it from the publisher developer perspective of we need to make more money. He doesn't see that this is millions of dollars of free advertising, and anybody in a marketing department understands that. But here is an ultimate irony piece. So Jacksepticeye, again, huge streamer, huge YouTuber. He tweeted, "I find this extremely ironic, considering you have fan art of me, a streamer, as your banner from when I played Savage Planet, a game that Hutchinson had apparently worked on. And here's the kicker. You've even cropped out their watermark in the banner and haven't given them credit for it anywhere. Very hypocritical." So this guy's banner on Twitter is a piece of fan art of a streamer, Jacksepticeye, who was made by one of his fans, and he cropped out the watermark, gave no credit, did not get permission, because the artist who made it, at Rare Magpie, Rare_Magpie on Twitter, said, "Wow, anyway, guys, the art he uses as the banner is by me. No, he didn't ask for my permission or give me a credit for the art. He did crop out my watermark, though, which is very appreciative of him." The ultimate irony. You're stealing somebody else's content for your Twitter profile, and you're not giving mm-hmm. credit, you're not paying licensing. Quite frankly, sir, you're a piece of shit. So, shall we move
yes.
on?
Yes, let's do.
All right, so I got one other little thing I wanted to report as news about Humble Bundle and Humble Choice. It's been kind of a rumbling in the community since Humble Choice came out at the end of last year. We're coming up on the 1-year anniversary of the change to the program. And let's just say that their releases have at times been less than stellar. Like the monthly options have been not so great. The last 3 months, I believe, consecutively, they have offered the top tier subscribers, that is both Classic and their premium, whatever it's called, tier available to new subscribers, has offered all 12 games in the bundle, in the choice, because it was supposed to be you get to choose 10 out of the 12 games. Lately, they've been offering all 12 games. On top of that, I personally got an email when I paused this month because I was not interested in this month's offerings, where the headliner was Tropico 6, a strategy game that I just don't really have a lot of interest in, and a bunch of other games that don't... There's one game in the entire thing that really appeals to me, if I'm honest. They sent me an email where they're like, well, you would normally pay $12. Would you like to pay $6 to turn your subscription back on? And I was like... Okay, well, $12 I didn't really want to pay for a bunch of games I wasn't going to play, but $6, I could maybe pay $6. And they've been doing stuff like that lately. And they've been offering other new subscription deals. What I'm reporting basically here is they seem to be really struggling. And I'm not sure what's going on. Humble was bought out by IGN a couple years ago now. And I did a video on this on YouTube. If you go to the Soap and Squish channel, you can see me talk about the declining quality a little bit, but also there's been concern with them banning people for trading keys and stuff. But yeah, it's Humble is in an interesting spot right now because they seem desperate for business, and I get the impression that they're not doing so hot. Any thoughts on that, Mark?
I'm still troubled by you saying that you weren't going to pay $12 for a fucking bundle, but for some reason it suddenly magically became good at six. If you're going to fucking just throw money away, just fucking send it to me, PayPal.
Well, no. I mean, okay, so here's the thing. If I'm looking at a bundle of 12 games, and I have no interest in most of them, $12 is more than I want to spend. But if I'm looking at a bundle of 12 games and I see one game that I want to play and maybe one or two others that I would at least check out and give a chance, $6 seems pretty reasonable. I mean, $6 is a burger, you know? That's not a big commitment, you know? That's my lunch. That's two cups of coffee, you know, at a...
I get that. I get that. It's not really the amount that I was quizzing. It's like, these games suck. Okay, can you pay half price? Oh, okay. Let's go ahead and do
well,
it. What I'm talking about.
Right. Well, I mean, because that's the thing. Like, I will buy a shitty game for a dollar. I've proven that before. You know? I'd buy that for a dollar. It's just...
Yeah, by the way, I keep looking for that One Punch or whatever that fucking game is you talked about on the Switch, because I've got enough gold coins to buy it when it's down to a dollar. And that some bitch is still $5, and it has been since you brought it up. So thanks for nothing.
Well, I'm sorry, man. Like, that's you know, it's a good game. You should maybe give it the $5. I don't know what to tell you. It is what it is. Also, they got roasted this month because they gave Goat of Duty is in there, and Goat of Duty was given away for free on Steam and is a dead game. It has like less than 20 concurrent players most of the time. So what the hell? Like, why is that even in this bundle? It's getting rough on the Humble front, and you know, I just want to report that to any PC gamers out there. Kind of keep an eye on things. That said, their audiobook and ebook and comic side has been awesome in the last year or two. As a matter of fact, there's a Warhammer, basically Black Library Games Workshop, both Warhammer and Warhammer 40,000 audiobook bundle out right now, where the top tier is $18, and you can get a couple hundred hours of audiobooks from a company that produces some interesting stories. And I am definitely going to buy that because I buy pretty much everything they put out for that IP. That kind of stuff is awesome. I've bought multiple comic bundles in the past. Like, they've really been killing it on that front. They've done some awesome stuff. They had an amazing Walking Dead. You basically got the entire run of Walking Dead comics earlier this year. I think $20 was the top end. It was an incredible deal to get the digital versions of all those comics. It's not as if the Humble platform is like completely whiffing all the time, but the game selection is getting rough. So that might you know, there might be a couple things involved there. Moving on. Mark, I've been talking a lot. Why don't you tell me about what you've been playing lately?
Well, I don't, unlike the other times we recorded, I really don't have a whole lot to add to what I've been playing because I haven't really been playing a whole lot. I did finally get my review, it's in post-production now, of the Neo Geo cabinet that Unico sent me for review that had 50 games built in. So I test drove most of them. But if you want to talk about, like, titles that I don't own it, nobody owns it, but titles that's in my house that's not going to be shipped away like the Neo Geo cabinet will be. Man, I have been wearing the hell out of Mario 35. I have been wearing the absolute hell out of that game. I log on to my Switch with the intent of maybe going to Animal Crossing. That's kind of lost its sheen for me. It's pretty much the same thing all the time. I mean, it's still a good game, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if I've got the lifespan left to want to go fucking pick trees for the next 2 years. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's a good game. But Mario, I'm telling you what, Mario 35 is fucking awesome. I didn't really care that much for Tetris 99, probably because I didn't really care for Tetris all that much. I know that's going to fucking piss off some damn puzzle fans, but Tetris is what it is. I mean, it's a great game for, you know, its time, which was, what, 40 years ago? But Mario 35, I'm going to tell you what. I'm sitting here. I'll sit down when I get off work and I get my dinner and all that, and I sit down. All right, I'm only going to play maybe five runs. They're so damn quick that those five turn into 50 pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
But I love it, man. And I think you said you haven't downloaded it yet. What the fuck are you waiting on, man? It's going to be gone in March.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people clamoring for it to stay around, like, which it's Nintendo, so they'll probably tell us all to eat a dick, quite frankly. You know, I mean, that's the weird thing is, but, like, a lot of people have been saying, like, why can't this stick around? This is an awesome, fun game. This is a really transformative experience for
it is
Mario
it is.
Brothers.
And now, Nintendo's online service is only $20 a year anyway and $30 for a family. So, I mean, yeah, the service itself leaves a lot to be desired. Voice chat, I'm talking to you. But the virtual console or whatever they're calling it, I know it's not a virtual console, that was on the Wii, but they're might be coming out with N64. I've heard rumors of that. That would be amazing. But, they've already got the NES, NES, NES on there. And then they have the Tetris 99. And then they dropped this, and I'm going to tell you, man, that makes that an even better value for $20 a year, being able to play that some bitch all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is something that I will say about the Nintendo Online subscription. So, for one, the family plans are extraordinarily fair. You can get, I think it's up to 10 people on a family plan for a minimal jump up from what it costs for an individual user. You're almost basically crazy to not just get a family plan and then hunt down all your friends who need, you know, everybody chip in a little bit. Give me a fiver and you're good. You could actually make money that way. everybody give me a $5 bill and you can all be on my family plan.
I would like the way we used to do with pay-per-views during the boxing matches and the wrestling events.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so yeah, $60 for the pay-per-view, have 30 people over, pay $2 a head, and you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. No, but they offer a lot on top of the connectivity features that you get in some games like Animal Crossing and others. You know, you can play the NES library, which is pretty extensive. It's not, you know, it's not comprehensive, but it's extensive. And you can play the SNES library, and that's, again, not comprehensive, but it is extensive. And then you get stuff like Super Mario 35. We had the, you know, the Tetris 99 thing. You get stuff like that comes out, and it's fun. It's not always my cup of tea to play those games, but it's something that is free, which is awesome if you have children. It's awesome if you just want something as a time waster to check out. It's just additional perks that keep coming, so... Yeah, I will continue to praise their online membership because it's reasonably costed and it comes with enough features to make it seem worthwhile. So that kind of...
Yes, now I am waiting on the... Let me get this out before you go on. I am waiting on the 3D All-Stars to come and I
only spent maybe 15 minutes in Mario Sunshine in my entire life.
Uh-huh.
So I am very, very much looking forward to getting that. I know a lot of people say the Sunshine is probably the least best out of all the Super Marios, but I can't say if it is or it isn't because I haven't played it. But I'm looking forward to getting that title.
Some people really love Sunshine. I mean, I think it's a matter of taste, you know? That's the thing. I'm downloading 35 right now, by the way, so you can stop yelling at me. If anybody's listening to this.
Almighty. It's only been a fucking month.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, these things happen. I have a come-and-go relationship with my Switch where I'll barely touch it for a while, and then I'll be on it all the time. So, speaking of what I've been playing lately, I mentioned Among Us earlier. Been playing that a little bit with some friends over the last couple weekends. A lot of fun. Nicole and I play with... I have a group of real-life friends that we play with. We played last night. We played last weekend. I was the imposter three games in a row last night, which was a little tedious because it gets a little crazy. But yeah, again, Among Us is it's a fun game to watch other people play. It's a fun game to play with your friends, and it has blown up because of the Twitch and YouTube communities. It has become a cultural revolution, if you will. Like there's terms and language that are derived from it that have started to, you know, invade everyday speaking, and it's
what, like Green New Deal?
What's that?
What, like Green New Deal?
No, I don't even know what that means. It's like, you know, Mark, you're being pretty sus right now.
It's an AOC reference.
Okay. Yeah. Calm down. Back in your cage, old man. But the other game I've been playing lately, I've been putting a lot of time into, is Genshin Impact. Genshin Impact, if you're not familiar, is it's a game from the studio miHoYo, who made Honkai Impact 3rd, which was an interesting mobile game. It is interesting because Genshin is a hybrid mobile game that is also playable on the PlayStation 4 and is also playable on PC. And is supposedly having a Switch port coming at some point. And you can play it on both iOS and Android. I honestly think the best version of the game is probably either on PlayStation 4 or on PC. I play it predominantly on PC, but I can log in on my phone from time to time. But this has been a bit of a revolution because this is a fully realized RPG with only two zones open, a pretty expansive world that you can wander, open world experience that you can wander around and explore, and it has been immensely popular. They made $100 million in their first couple days out in microtransactions, because here is the caveat, and Mark, you're going to hate this. It has a gacha. It has banners to pull characters. It does give you a fair amount of free currency on a regular basis, but yeah, you could potentially dump thousands to try to get some of these characters and get them upgraded as much as humanly possible. But the thing that I will advocate is that you can play this game without spending a cent. You absolutely can. There are some issues initially with the game right now. The big thing is, if you play it at all, you'll understand what I'm talking about. There are concerns over resin. Because resin is it's an energy type mechanic that limits the amount that you can do certain activities that basically let you advance your characters, which are, you get the upgrade materials both for the characters and for their skills and also for their weapons and stuff. And, you know, you only get so much that recharges every day. And right now the community widely considers it to not be sufficient. And that, unfortunately, once you hit a certain point in progression, it's basically like you log in for a half an hour, you're done with everything, and unless you're spending money to get these refreshes, you can't keep playing and you can't keep advancing. So it's going to probably take some time for the developer to kind of figure out how to approach that issue. They already announced a change that is insufficient, but anyways, if you want to give it a glance, if you want to give it a try, it's a lot of fun to play, at least initially. You might drop it after playing for a week or so. That's fine. It's totally free to play, but it does have a potentially pay-to-win mechanic. But it's a single-player experience. There is some mild multiplayer, like there's some events and stuff where you are able to play multiplayer, but it's not the focus. So, anyways, the point is, Been playing that a bunch. It's a lot of fun. I played it initially to check it out because there was so much hype around it, and I was kind of blown away by the experience. So that's where I'm at with that.
All right. I want to clarify one thing about my thoughts on RNG in games.
Okay.
And loot boxes and things like that. Okay. Now, what you're mentioning is that game specifically, RNG is involved in getting the characters, correct?
The loot boxes, if you will, are for getting characters. You are given, you're given a main character, and you're given several of the characters for free, at least the initial copy of them. You know what I mean? Like there's
yes,
like four or five guaranteed characters. Yeah. So go ahead. Yep.
You see, that is what I can't stand. That's predatory, and I'm sure the game has not released the odds. Like, you know, one in a billion gets this character, like you have to do with sweepstakes. So that's where RNG, I and me do not get along. Where I don't mind it as much is if the RNG roulette wheel or whatever the case may be, the chest or whatever, if you get a chance to get the premium currency in different amounts, and then once you get the currency that you need, then you can choose which characters to purchase with that. That I don't mind at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't mind that at all. But the if that's the only way you can get the characters and that's pay to win, fuck that. Fuck the developers and fuck the publishers and fuck anybody who plays it.
It's a little more nuanced than that because right now there's a character banner, for example, that has a 5-star character, Klee, who's available. They're limited to that banner, so they're only around for, I think, the 3 weeks that the banner is available. And then there are three other characters that if you are getting 4-star drops, you will get those characters. So you have some selection, you know, like you're pulling for this rare character, but then you're also going to get these ancillary characters. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of choice. And there's also, when you roll on the banners, you get secondary currencies as a byproduct of it that you can use. You can get a few things that are extra, you know, like extra rerolls and stuff for that. But you can also get, you can select a couple of the characters. You can get a copy of them for some of that alternative currency. So there is some choice involved. It's not entirely RNG. There is an RNG element. And here's the thing. The argument I'm making is you can play this game without spending a cent. You don't have to pull a 5-star character to be able to play the story and enjoy the story, clear the story. And there's dozens of hours in the story alone. And the story is, I'll be honest with you, it's a pretty good story. It's cute. It's fun. You know, it's all about your goals. If you're trying to be the best of the best and you're a progression-oriented player, yeah, it's going to be, you know what I mean? You're gonna there's incentive to spend, but
The biggest problem that I have with that with those type of mechanics is, I mean, there are multiple different types of gamers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a completionist.
Right. Don't play like this game. Everything. Yeah, don't play this game.
That's what I'm getting.
Yeah, it's also an anime style game, so it's not really your cup of tea. But yeah, it's a really popular game right now. It's blowing up, but it's also having some, you know, growing pains initially. So that's a thing. But I've been playing that. And then the one other thing I really wanted to mention is it's not so much something I've been playing, but something I've been watching on YouTube. So I watch a lot of YouTube because I usually watch it while I'm playing games that have repetitive elements and stuff. And I've been watching Worm Life lately, which is a reality series on YouTube that is about the company Wormwood Gaming that makes these really high-end, expensive, woodworked gaming tables for tabletop gaming and accessories for tabletop gaming. So you might have heard of them. They make these really beautiful tables. Some of these tables are thousands upon thousands of dollars, possibly $10,000 or up. They're really beautiful, they're gorgeous. And then they make... they have their own custom dice for games like D&D. They have dice vaults. They have dice towers. They have dice trays. They have all this kind of stuff. They make gaming accessories and tables. And I gotta tell you, I've been really surprised by this because it's and I say reality show, it's basically them just like recording stuff around the factory or when they're going to events and stuff. It's really entertaining. The people involved are pretty funny. They seem like a mostly largely laid back company. They're doing really well. Their business model is usually to do Kickstarters. So when they have a new line of products come out, they do a Kickstarter, it gets funded, and then they make to meet that demand and everything. They've had some ups and downs, such as ordering a Chinese CNC machine that came and was broke within 2 days, and then they order a $70,000 CNC machine that they struggled to get into their warehouse factory, and then that broke after like 2 weeks. Really entertaining stuff. But like, it's,
well, I mean, for a $10,000 table, did you say five figures for a table?
Yeah.
Well, that's something, it's better have a glory hole if I'm getting it.
Well, you know, and the thing is, so the cost of those tables varies based on the type of wood they're using. So like, there are some, you know, rare woods out there that are very expensive. And, you know, and they're also difficult to work with, so there's a lot of material loss when you're trying to craft items, you know what I mean? For example, I forget which one it was, but one of their wood types, they talk about it, they're like, it splinters a lot, and so, like, you can be partway through a piece, even as an expert artisan, you can be partway through, the piece that you're putting together or whatever, and it could splinter or crack or something, and you have to start from scratch. So there's high material costs with some of them. But like this, it's really sturdy stuff. I believe they back it up by, you know, some level of guarantee. I don't know exactly how extensive that is. The more reasonable stuff is like their dice towers and their dice vaults and stuff like that, which are also really nice. And you can get, I believe you can get them customized sometimes and stuff like that. It's really nice stuff. Like Artisan Crafting, they're a relatively small company doing awesome things. But Worm Life on YouTube, they are one of the sponsors of Critical Role, which is, if you follow like D&D content on the internet, Critical Role is basically the most famous online D&D show, with voice actors that play it, and Matt Mercer, the DM, who's incredible. Basically, yeah, you can go check that out. And, you know, there's some overlap with some of those other shows I mentioned. Like, they have, you know, they see each other and stuff at events and things. It's pretty cool. I've been really entertained by it. And it's been kind of an interesting phenomenon where, like, them doing the Worm Life series has made their company more successful because it's given people a sight into how they operate and everything, and has made them, they've grown their fan base because people like the way they do business and the way they do the show. So that's something I've been checking out.
Good on them.
Yeah. It's
good on them. What's their website? Moremoneythansense.com.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, listen, man, like, you know, we talked about the cabinet, the custom cabinet community, right? If you get one of those high end custom cabs, those are a few thousand, right? Several thousand.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, yep. I mean, and if you think about it, so we're in these tables we're talking about are, you know, they're really high quality wood. I believe their like creme de la creme table has a hand crank feature where you can lower and raise the insert in the middle of the table so that like you can have a recess so that things can be happening inside, and then you can raise it up if you want things to be raised up for some reason. It's,
yeah, wow. Yeah, because standing up and pulling the motherfucker out is too much trouble.
No, that's not, I mean, it's literally like a, anyways, it's not the point. Screw you, man. No.
I know.
I guess that about,
even if I had the money, I would not spend that on a fucking table.
Well, no.
Even if I was a huge D&D player.
But if, well, you see, know? If you were a huge D&D player, you might feel differently, you know?
Yeah, well.
If you had the money, would you not buy a really nice custom cabinet that had all the features, all the bells and whistles?
No, if I had that type of money, I would be buying nothing but authentic cabinets.
Okay, well, that, you know, that's also fair. Not everybody has the room to have a home arcade.
Well, we're talking about, you know, an alternate reality where I have money.
Right.
So if in that reality, if I have money, then I'm also going to have the fucking room. So I'm just going to dream big.
There you go. All right. Yeah. I think that about wraps us up for this episode, right?
Yeah, that'll do.
That'll do. So we will try to, I'll get this out as soon as possible, but basically, let's try to do this on a weekly basis again. Let's get back on track. We hope you guys are enjoying listening to the show. We really enjoy sitting down and talking like this for you. And, you know, we've gotten great feedback. Mark, I know you've said you've gotten tons of feedback from people who've really been enjoying the show. So we love hearing that. Reach out some more. You can, you know, hit us up both on our socials. I'm at Soapbox Klotz on pretty much everything. Mark is at Get Off My Lawn Gaming on pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. We're out there. You can join the All Things Gaming Facebook group or Discord if you want. You can hang out with us and a bunch of other cool people and post content and all that kind of stuff. So thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Keep gaming on. We'll see you next time.
Peace out.